Well, today there are around 15 Vietnamese restaurants in the St. Louis region, but that wasn't the case in 1985 when My Lee opened its doors. And today on Soundbites, our monthly segment with Sauce Magazine, we're going to explore that with Sauce's executive editor, LaGaya Figueres. Hi, LaGaya. Welcome back.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
When we talk about the first Vietnamese restaurant in St. Louis, is it sort of a guess or do we know exactly?
I guess it's kind of sort of a guess. It depends on if you want to be a stickler for numbers. My Lee opened in 1985, and I think most people do consider My Lee to be pretty much the first Vietnamese restaurant in St. Louis. However, Webster Garden, Vietnamese in off Big Bend in Old Orchard, did open in 1983. Their menu is split right down the middle between Vietnamese and Chinese cuisine. So whether you consider I guess it's really, you know, maybe it's up for debate. Right. I know that My Lee didn't actually start out as a Vietnamese restaurant either, and its menu has evolved to become that.
But as, you know, as restaurants go, that's not a long time. How long has Italian been in St. Louis?
Right. When you think about cuisine for a city to only, since 1985, to have grown is a wonderful thing. But you're right. It's a short time for cuisine.
Well, my first experience with Vietnamese food was 25 years ago here in St. Louis. And it really honestly is my favorite kind of food now.
Yay.
I could live on spring rolls. But, LaGaya, do you remember your first time?
I'm trying to remember. Maybe it was Faux Grand. I really don't remember.
Right. Well, that's where I've been going for 25 years. So it must
delicious
be one of the
food
early
there too. Actually, and South Grand has a wonderful cluster of Vietnamese cuisine restaurants, and there's also a cluster in the U City on Olive too as well.
Well, you mentioned there are just about 15 in St. Louis Vietnamese restaurants, which really isn't a lot because I mentioned Italian. How many Italian restaurants could there be here? Hundreds?
Hundreds. No, you know what? I don't know. I can't say for sure. What do you think? 200? Okay. 150? I don't know. I don't want to say.
1,000? 1,000? Well, let's welcome Quy Tran. He's My Lee's executive chef and co-owner, who he owns along with his mom. Quy, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And according to LaGaya here, the job title you prefer is not co-owner or executive chef, but restaurant dude.
I do like that title.
Why is that?
I think, you know, it's always, everyone's really formal, you know, kind of what I've always done and the way I approach things is very, not so much informal, but more relaxed. I mean, it's a tough business and, you know, labels, it's executive chef, owner, I don't have any classical training, so I'm always like, I'm the bus boy, you know,
whatever
today,
needs to be done.
Right, whatever, right. You know, so it feels more comfortable because I like to be in the mix with the people and be on the grind with my staff.
Right. So. Well, I want to talk about the food in a moment, but just a little historical perspective, if we could. Your family left Vietnam in 1980. And so what's the story here? How'd you end up in St. Louis?
Well, we actually left in 1978. My father was we're the Ellis Island part two, you know, basically immigrants. My father was a colonel of South Vietnamese Army, you know. The war had ended. He was still doing intelligence, you know, helping non-communists that have won in Vietnam. And so they were coming to get him, and we literally jumped ship. So that's the story. We jumped ship, and we went to two different refugee camps, and we hit the lottery and came to the best place in the world.
I understand once you got here, you actually grew up on the hill?
I grew up on the hill. I lived right at Reburn Southwest.
So you went from toasted ravioli to spring rolls.
You know, there's nothing wrong with either.
I told him when I did an interview with him, I'm like, where'd your accent come from? Are you from New York at some point? He's like, no, because I grew up on the hill.
Right. That explains it. Well, the first location, My Lee, is now located. Would that be Brentwood?
Yes, that is considered Brentwood.
How do you describe your location there?
I just tell people I'm right behind the Best Buy off of Eager Road in Brentwood.
Right.
And everybody, you know, associates and knows exactly where the Best Buy is.
Right off the Hanley exit on 40.
Correct.
Right. But originally you were out, I think it was Delmar and 170?
Yes, we were right at the southeast corner of Delmar and 170.
Now, you began just serving Chinese food and I think gradually introduced Vietnamese into the mix.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We actually started, so for those that do not know, my mother's name is Lee. And she went to business with a woman named Mai. And, you know, we came here in 1980, so, you know, their English wasn't very well, it wasn't very good at all. And so she entrusted a partner, which didn't turn out too well. And we started with Chinese food because she worked various restaurants and she learned the systems and how they set up. And she opened up a Chinese restaurant because at the time that seemed to be what was thriving and what was doing well. And, you know, Vietnamese food was unheard of. Like, even for us, we in the community, we never knew that a Vietnamese restaurant existed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it didn't do so well. And Mai basically left town with the money and left us with all the debt. And
I have to ask you something, and I don't know if this is a factor or not. But, you know, gee, when you guys got here, the late 70s, and opening a restaurant not too long after that, you know, there are a lot of feelings about Vietnam. The war hadn't been over long. You know, there are a lot of mixed feelings. And for example, American soldiers that came back weren't respected, many of them, and I'm painting with a wide brush, weren't respected or welcomed back like soldiers from other wars had been, just because I guess it was a sore topic. Did your family feel that in any way when you started a Vietnamese restaurant? Were there people that thought, oh, they had, you know, baggage?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there were times, you know, I tell people all the time, I said, you know, you can't control the things that other people do. And so, you know, whether it was, you know, racism or whether it was just, you know, bad feelings, I mean, there's nothing you can do. You know, those people are going to feel the way they feel. And it's up to us to really, you know, not make a big deal of it and just make our part and do our part. And I mean, that's, well, you know.
We certainly have. Let's get to that right now, because I'd never been to Mai Li, believe it or not, until Monday of this week when LaGaia asked me to meet her and Mira from her staff at your place for lunch, which I did, and I loved it. So why don't we talk about that experience?
That was a great experience.
Number one, something that I did not expect at all, you brought us an appetizer, which was, I've never been a fan of calamari particularly. I always thought it was kind of like not good bar food.
We need to take you out more often.
I know, I don't get out much. But anyway, tell me what you brought us, and I thought it was great.
We do a salted pepper calamari. It's a very traditional. It is bar food. But, you know, because in Vietnam, we consider it bar food, like food that you would have with, you know, booze, whether it be beer or, you know, some type of wine or whatever. So we lightly bread it, you know, We shake it with a lot of different aromatics, chilies, shallots, you know, garlic. And we toss it with, like, green peppers, onions. It's fabulous.
I want to spend a minute and talk about, like, what makes Vietnamese food Vietnamese. One thing I noticed about yours, and I'm no expert on Vietnamese food, but from the other places, I thought yours maybe was just a little bit spicier than some of the others I had. Would that be accurate, you think?
Yeah, it's all the way that you like to eat. You know, I'm more of a spicy eater, so I like, you know, that spice aspect of it.
Well, what makes Vietnamese food Vietnamese food? What are the elements?
I think, I mean, it's all going to be very similar throughout all of Asia. I think for us, we have, the big French influence. So therefore I think I think we are one of the few, if not the only, like, cuisine that actually eats with French bread, you know? So we actually incorporate a sandwich and we actually eat certain stews with, you know, with the French style baguette, and, you know, we cook with butter. So a lot of times, you know, not a lot of Asian cuisines cook with butter. And that's something that, you know, the French brought over.
I think also along the lines of the French, something like pho actually does have a French influence because of those delicate French meat broths that you're combining with Vietnamese rice noodles. So that's an example where, you know, you have a French influence. In the north, I would say you guys are fairly heavily influenced by China, especially with your stir fries and your noodle soups. And maybe in the south, sort of a blend of Cambodian and Thai influence as well.
Yeah, the south is, you know, where we're from is basically going to have more of the French influence. And that's exactly right.
So we want to just quickly run through some of the ingredients and hallmarks of Vietnamese cooking. I think what's been really important with Vietnamese flavor, people talk so often about balance, this balance of flavors, and also this balance of sour, bitter, you know, sweet, salty, cooling and heating, and also even fresh and fermented. And they just find this wonderful balance. I would say that at Quy's place, a chef hangout, one of the things that he recognized was just how bright it is, and that chefs probably come there because it's such bright, fresh flavors, and they do that very, very well.
And I never feel stuffed.
You could eat it all the time. I mean, summertime is a great time to eat Vietnamese food. It's very light.
That's because you didn't sit long enough with us that day.
I was in a hurry, unfortunately, but I really, really did enjoy it. So could Vietnamese food be very different depending on the part of Vietnam that the chef might be from?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, just LaGaia talking about, you know, whether it's the northern region, the central region, or southern region. There's three main regions of Vietnam, and it's north, central, and south. And, you know, it's, you know, like, for example, you know, like you said, like pho, it's pot and pho is the actual ancestral dish, and that's a French stew, you know. And so it's, you know, all the different restaurants in town are all separated by regions. You know, some people will be from the north, some will be from the south, some will be from central.
Well, Cree, we want to give you a test.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if you're prepared for this. But I've only noticed this at Vietnamese restaurants, and maybe it's not exclusive to that. But the menu items, and it helps when you can't pronounce things like I can't. When the menu items are numbered, it makes it easy. But how many items are in your menu?
We have basically like 200 items.
No, 202.
Biz.
Now, LaGaia, I think Cui has told you that he knows them all, but you well, find that hard to believe.
He sometimes knows them all. No, let's put him on the spot. Okay, Cui, number 158. I have the menu in front of me.
158 is water spinach stir-fried with garlic.
Oh, my gosh. That's very impressive. Oh, say it to us in Vietnamese, please.
It's pronounced Ramung Toi.
Okay.
That's exactly.
All right. We're going to go for – we'll do one more for him. Oh, how about the 89?
89 is a very popular dish at the restaurant. It is baluk lak, which is the wok-seared steak we do with a lemon pepper sauce.
No, it's the marinated steak cubes wok seared on a bed of lettuce, tomato, and onions if we want to be sticklers. Well done.
Very good.
Oh, gosh. I'm starting to sweat a little bit here.
Why are – you know, that's another thing. Why are there so many items? Because other restaurants don't have 202. I mean, I would think 30 items is a lot for other places.
You know, it's quite amazing because I actually – you know, when you open, I talk about this a lot with other people, because when you open a restaurant, everybody's always like, keep it simple, stupid. We're going to have, you know, 20 items. This is our menu. But I think in the Asian community, it's always been, whether it's Chinese or what, you know, Vietnamese or Thai, it's always been like the abundance, you know, it's always like the more, the better. So I don't know how my mom ended up doing it, but she did it, and we just kept adding. It just kept going.
Are there any Vietnamese cookbooks that you like?
My favorites are both by Luke Nguyen. That's spelled Nguyen. He's actually the Cooking Channel host, and the two books, My Vietnam and The Food of Vietnam, both really wonderful.
He's great. I love his show.
I have to tell you one thing that I noticed at your restaurant that I'd never seen before. It makes so much sense. I appreciated it. And I want to ask you that. When, of course, I took food home. So when the waiter came over and, you know, boxed my food up and put it in a bag, he took a plastic – and this makes so much sense. I've never seen it. He took a plastic bag and wrapped the to-go container in the plastic bag before he put it in the paper bag, ensuring, you know, that I didn't end up with
– It didn't end up in your car.
Scallops on my front seat. Does anybody else do that? I've never seen it.
We practice safe food.
It's a really nice touch. Lots of nice touches happen at Miley.
I hear a rumor that you might have a new restaurant.
We're contemplating. You know, we're working with an idea, and we're going to, you know, do a little recipe development, and, you know, we'll keep everybody posted.
Would that be Vietnamese?
It could be a lot of different things, but Vietnamese, of course, you know, would be involved in that decision-making.
Something with hoisin? No.
Yeah, there you go. I'm sure that would be involved as well.
I want to remind people that there's an interview with Cui in, what do you call the column that you do?
What I Do.
What I Do, right. That's in Sauce, the July edition of Sauce Magazine, which is out right now. So, what's next?
Well, you're near Pappy's, and I've got Mike Emerson right here in front of me in the Sauce Magazine, so I could run to get some ribs and come right back to finish this interview.
Yeah, Reader's Choice this month, right?
Reader's Choice this month. All the picks for the best from our readers, yes.
And before we go, this is Food Truck Friday.
Yes, it is a food truck extravaganza day, actually, today in Tower Grove Park from 4 to 8. 20-plus food trucks plus beverages, entertainment. Come on down to Tower Grove. And then we also, actually, St. Louis Art Museum Outdoor Film Series. Food trucks will be there beginning at 6. Ferris Bueller airs at 9 on Art Hill.
That's LaGaia Figueres of Sauce Magazine. We've also been talking with Cui Tran of My Lee. And we want to thank you both for being here. I loved your place, and I'll be back.
Thank you.
Now commentator Nancy Kranzberg shares these thoughts about the definition of sculpture.
The standard definition of sculpture in almost any dictionary says that sculpture is the art of modeling, welding, or otherwise producing figurative or abstract works of art in three dimensions, as in relief, intaglio, or in the round. An article put out by the British Arts Council says that this standard definition was first challenged many years ago when new practices and a greater diversity in the range and use of materials extended the vocabulary. The term can now be said to encompass installation, land art, body art, performance art, text-based work, photography and video, as well as the three-dimensional art object. Another article entitled The De-Definition of Sculpture by Graham Coulter Smith cites many examples of the shift from what we think of as traditional sculpture. The Duchampian ready-made, remember the urinal entitled Fountain, is certainly the first and perhaps most powerful deconstruction of the category of sculpture. He makes reference to Robert Morris's work, which can be described as installation art in which people could actually enter and walk through. Morris declared that art was no longer bound by the categories of painting and sculpture, but had evolved into a complex and expanded field. Mary Lou Canode, the director of Longmire Sculpture Park, says the days of nymphs and fountains have changed and that the future of sculpture has to do with social practice. She goes on to say that the definition of sculpture is much more broad and often has to do with the intervention of the artist into a public space. Juan William Chavez, an artist who was exhibited at Longmire, says sculpture has expanded from museums and galleries through community-based projects that transform and impact the everyday. Both Chavez and Sam Durant, whose work is currently on display at Longmire, are known nationally and even internationally for their use of sculpture to make social commentaries. Both artists use non-traditional art materials. Chavez actually uses bees for his living proposal, Pruitt-Igoe Bee Sanctuary. He explores the destruction of a failing public housing project and the land it was on, which has now become a woodland populated by bees. Observing the number of bees that had claimed the woodland as their own, Chavez came to think about the sculptural comparisons and the metaphorical potential of bee communities, realizing that, like the human population of St. Louis, honeybees are, for various environmental reasons, also on the decline. Mary Lou Canode says, there's all kinds of sculpture everywhere in our city. Look around at the Arch, and even Bell Fountain Cemetery has billboards which advertise it as the other sculpture park. Our current exhibition, Mound City, coincides with the 250th anniversary of the modern founding of St. Louis, just as STL 250 provides an umbrella for community-wide birthday celebrations of the white settler presence in the region. Mound City celebrates the community-wide presence of the ancient native culture scattered across our landscape. A part of the Mound City exhibition, entitled Loans That Don't Move, has allowed Longmire to collaborate with the St. Louis Art Museum, Cahokia Mounds Park, Mastodon State Park, and the Missouri History Museum. It was thrilling to see scholars come to St. Louis from around the world to attend a conference entitled Monument/Anti-Monument, which was a part of Sculpture City St. Louis 2014, a multi-partner project spearheaded by Longmire Sculpture Park and VIA Partnership, designed to draw attention to the vast sculptural resources in St. Louis and to engage the community in conversation about the role that sculpture, past and present, has played in defining our complex urban realm. We really are Sculpture City, and whether you consider the Arch and Cahokia Mound sculpture or architecture, they are just a hop, skip, and a jump away from one another, and both are indeed world famous. I'm Nancy Kranzberg.
Nancy Kranzberg has been involved in the arts community for some 30 years on numerous arts-related boards. Next week on Cityscape, we're going to talk about Stages St. Louis's production of How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. Join Don Marsh Monday for St. Louis on the Air, when he'll be talking about current issues pertaining to the law with a panel of legal experts. Cityscape is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with assistance from Aaron Dorr, Amanda Hunnickfort, and Kyle Jacoby. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Cityscape is made possible in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. Cityscape is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. I'm Steve Potter, and I hope that you'll join us next week.